Welcome to Hot Boga. This podcast is sponsored by ASAC Camo, the camo you wear hunting, not on a date. All right, next one up. Our next sponsor is New Breed Archery. Check out their custom options at newbreedarchery.com and have your next bow shipped direct to your door.
All right. Next one is Black Eagle Arrows. I miss the target a lot, and I have yet to break a Black Eagle arrow. I don't know why. I don't know what kind of voodoo magic they use to make these things so strong, but I love it. Check them out.
FHF Gear has really found a way to pair functionality of the hunting and fishing industry. Their products provide the users who use them just kind of the freedom to add or eliminate accessories as necessary. They're proudly made in America and backed by a warranty that exhibits not only their confidence, but also their belief in customer service. So FHF Gear, fish, hunt, fight.
Finally, our last sponsor is Burris. They make some fantastic, innovative, durable, and accurate products, especially the new Oracle Bow Sight. It's gonna change the way you hunt. Check them out. And most importantly, we have the record button.
All right,
Price brothers, introduce yourselves.
Yep, I'm Ryan Price, the younger brother.
And I'm Scott Price, the older, better looking brother.
Okay, ooh.
Hold on a second. Now wait a second.
Do you want a redo?
I killed less bears though, so I don't know.
Well,
it evens
wait.
Out.
Let's go back real quick. I mean, we can stack you guys up against each other like a cage match.
Right. Oh well, no.
Who's got a turkey tag in their pocket?
Oh, sure. Right to the throat he goes. Nice. Right to the throat.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Yeah, so for whoever's listening, Scott, who's talking, I did not fill my bonus tag. I'm the only one out of near everybody I know. So that's what that's about.
Next question. Ryan 1, Scott 0. Who's got their PA buck tag in their pocket?
Woo! All right.
Wow, he's really hitting you hard.
Arm out.
Oh, Ryan 2, wow. Scott 0.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, the good news is we both killed bears.
And I didn't.
More bear kills.
Right. Oh, well, yeah. I should have brought that up, damn.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, well, I got your back.
Did you even take a shot, Joe? Did you even take a shot?
I did.
You took a shot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was left out of a lot of the texts I got from you.
Oh, me damn.
It had nothing to do with the shot being fired. That's a
listen, there was lots of shots being fired.
That is funny.
And
yep.
I
wow.
Ryan is my on-the-spot witness that I didn't miss.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't miss.
I didn't miss.
You had the assist.
Yeah.
It was
a small war zone, you know?
Yeah.
It was a small bear. It was a small bear.
It was an average bear, yeah. Average small.
What was it? I can't remember. Was it 128 pounds was his bear? I think 128 was...
That sounds... Dressed.
Dressed, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was probably 145 or so live.
Yeah.
50, I don't know.
And it was running. And then
I mean, it's thick in there, too.
Through brush. It was thick brush.
They're deceiving. They run deceivingly fast. They look slow.
Mm-hmm.
But they're actually moving.
You know, and they look a lot bigger than what they actually are. Almost always. You know?
Yeah.
So take me back.
Well, we all thought it was a medium-sized bear if they saw it, but it was average, but it wasn't it was the smallest one we shot all week.
Yeah. And we thought it was the one that I chased in there, but the one I chased in there chased
Yes.
So we went back and did it again and killed a different one.
Yep. All right, go ahead, James.
No, take me back a little. You know, I've never done any bear hunting, and the bear hunting that we do in Michigan is mostly over bait.
Right.
So I want you guys to maybe give me a little background on how you guys run bear out there in PA.
So it's a four-day season. Every year we got a guy coming up from Chester County, but we have one guy coming from Texas who, Joe, you didn't meet this year, but he comes from Texas. Guys come from all over for once a year for 4 days, and we have a lot of private land that we go to, particularly our land, which is just about 200 acres.
Okay.
And we also have a lot of – luckily, we have a lot of state game land around here. And it's full of
swamps and thick rhododendron, and that's really where the bears live. So we'll get anywhere from like 18 to 25 guys, and we just hit these spots that we've been hitting for, you know, I just talked to my grandfather about this the other day. We've been hitting these same areas for over 200 years, my friend.
Really? Really?
Yeah. Yep. So, but we'll hit these areas where we know there's bears. We have trail cameras out all year. We have, you know, sightings, anything we have for scouting. We'll just hit these bears time and time again, these same spots. But the way we do it is we have drivers and standers, and we'll set drivers up on one side of the swamp.
Okay.
Standers on the other side, and these drivers will just move through real slow in a nice straight line, making noise, and just drive these bears out to the standers.
So when you're how long of a, you know, how far apart are you when you start this, you know, drive?
It really varies. I mean, some swamps, we've done swamps that were probably a quarter mile away, and it loops and it turns, and
right.
Some swamps are real small. It takes, you know, 30 minutes to do. It just depends on the area. Yeah.
We've had bears run back through us, and you can see the guy next to you. Mm-hmm. And if it's thick enough or they have a little low spot, they'll go right back through you like you're not even there.
Really?
So if, obviously, a more open spot, you don't have to be that close. If it's like this year, we did one drive. It was all open oak woods, which is where Ryan killed. And obviously, you don't have to be 15 yards apart for that. But
so you're just constantly picking apart little areas like that.
Right. Yep. This year, there wasn't many acorns, so we were targeting just places where they would go to – likely start looking for a place to bed down for the winter. Rhododendron banks, laurel, things like that. There were spotty white oaks, but it wasn't a widespread oak crop by any means. So we were going off of what people were telling us, where they saw bears, where we were seeing sign while deer hunting, and just past successful spots is what we were basing this year off of.
Power of scouting. When you're bear hunting, especially in areas where the three of us bear hunt, you know, a lot of guys just jump in the woods opening day. They kind of go in willy nilly and sit next to a swamp, but we are constantly looking for sign in the snow, looking for shit in the woods, looking for food. We're looking, you know, the list goes on and on, but it's constantly looking for bear sign and bears and, you know, going to bars and bullshitting to guys about, you know, where they saw the big bear, the big buck, you know, et cetera, you know, all that kind of stuff. That all plays a part in our success.
Yeah, Scott ran a Facebook post while we were out there just asking about if anybody had seen bears or...
Yep.
Yeah, and got a response.
Yep. Yeah, on our community Facebook page, I asked if anybody was having bear trouble. One lady said yes, and it just so happens that one of the guys we hunt with owns 500 acres right behind her house. And we went and drove it out and killed two bears off that hill the next day or so. So word of mouth is, especially during bear season, because right before bear season or during bear season, they're eating like crazy because they're going to start bedding up shortly thereafter or during bear season, depending on weather and food and things like that. Some years, if it's super cold and there's not a lot of food, a lot of them will be sleeping already by the time bear season comes.
Right.
This year happened to be fairly warm and a, you know, halfway decent year for food, so they were still out wandering around.
Yeah.
And by the way, while I'm thinking about it, five of our eight bears this year were killed on public land. So even though we kill or hunt a lot of private,
interesting.
I'd say we kill more on public, honestly.
So do you like use social media a lot to get hunting permission, or is this just a random time that it happened?
Yeah, I kind of did it as a joke this year. I told the guys I was going to make a Facebook post. They all laughed, and you know, it worked out. But
they're not laughing anymore.
Yeah, right. In terms of deer, we've used Facebook a half decent amount of times. Like we'll find them on Hunt Stand or whatever, find their name, and just search them on Facebook. And I've gotten not a ton, four or five properties just. Never even meeting the people, just messaging them on Facebook. So don't overlook that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is handy, especially when you have the following that the Price brothers have on social media.
We're getting there.
Yep. I can't believe it. That doesn't work for me in West Virginia. Nobody has a computer.
Mm-hmm. You need to find one.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's go back
to back on track.
Yo, so, I want you to tell me, so you've never gone bear hunting before.
No, so like I said, we met around turkey season, and somehow we'd got in contact with. You know what? I think I contacted them guys about wearing ASAT because they were from Pennsylvania. I had seen your Instagram, and I liked what you guys. You guys had some kid hunts on YouTube.
I do remember that.
You took some kids out, and I was like, these guys got it going on. I like it. And it was funny. It was light. And then I was watching some of your other stuff, and it was real. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I like these guys. So I messaged you, and we started talking about ASAT.
Yep.
And I got you guys into it, and got you started with that. And then we just talked it up ever since. And you guys had an opening for bear season, and you had mentioned you're like, oh, you got to come out and go bear hunt. And obviously, if you scroll through the Price Brothers Instagram, you can see a lot of their bear story, or their bear pictures and posts from the past.
Yeah.
And I think you guys even have a YouTube video or two.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, Ryan shot one in bow season.
It's awesome. Like, it's incredible. And I'm from PA. I've never hunted bear. And it's kind of a bear. I mean, deer is the big thing here, and then turkey, and then bear. It's one of the big three, the only three. And then you got elk now, but you got to have a million points.
You're gonna be waiting a while.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah, a million points. But I never went bear hunting. Now, my pap bear hunted, and we had talked about this a little bit before. He used to, all summer, he would, like, go to the hostess place and get all the reject bread and stuff and feed them. And they would hunt them. Yeah, but they never, my pap never killed a bear. He hunted them for, God, a whole bunch of years. And he was the real passive hunter. He hunted them from a stand. And, I mean.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, there are – we could – if we wanted to kill bears out of a stand, one of us would kill a bear every year. Yeah.
Could almost
Big bears. Yeah. It's not a bad way of doing it. There's no doubt.
Well, he never – you know, Lady Luck was never on his side. He never killed a bear. And my uncle kind of fell into bear hunting. And they only ever hunted at our camp, which is, I mean, it really waxes and wanes there with the bear population. Like, some years we would see them in the summer, some years we wouldn't. But they never did good during bear season. And I guess growing up, I never got that bug to go. Probably because they never killed any.
That makes a difference. That helps.
Yeah. And then in Clarion, well, and then, like I said, it was always trying to, if I could get time off, or if I had to pick, I was deer hunting.
Right.
And it's just the way it was. And well, the invitation came up. I'm like, man, these guys kill bears. I'm going to have to give it a shot. And you guys are very, it's very alluring, the way you talk about it. Like, it's almost more than just bear hunting. It's the atmosphere, the ambiance, you could say. But it's a, you know, there's a bunch of guys, it's driving, we don't stop, it's hunting all day. We don't screw around, we want to kill bears. And
while you mention that, you know, we don't just invite any Joe Schmo off the street. You know, you have to be young and athletic and willing, and to be a quality hunter, you have to be a good shot. You know, you're expected to drive. You could stand a couple, but you're expected to put the work in, and you're expected to be there as much as possible, unless there's an emergency or whatever. But, you know, we hold the guys we bring in to a very high standard, and you guys met that for sure.
So,
it was a fun.
How big are the groups that you guys you usually have out there? And then with that, I guess, who determines, or what determines, I guess, who's the shooter that day?
Generally, we have about 18. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the average throughout the 4 days. The first day, we usually have 20 or so. There's a couple one-day guys. But and the shooter, just, you know, as we're planning the drive, everybody just throws a hand up and says, I'll drive. Pretty much everybody volunteers to drive. Nobody volunteers to stand. Yeah. Everybody's going to look at you funny if you volunteer to stand. Unless you just drove five in a row, that's one thing. But
Then would you say then the standers have a worse opportunity a shot then? So the drivers are getting that first encounter?
No, it depends on the drive though too. Some drives you could literally only see your arm's length, so you're pretty much not shooting.
down in the old rhododendrons.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Joe hates those plants, and I gotta say, I have a beautiful rhodie in my backyard right now.
Yep, and it could stay right in the lawn, right? You don't want to bust through it.
This year, nobody that was a driver actually even got a shot.
Actually, Joe, the day you weren't there, the first day, Scott, Jimmy, and another guy, and actually four guys. There was three standers. Let's see here. How'd that go? Three drivers shot at one bear, and then another guy killed a bear. So it happens.
The standard. So Scott did miss.
Oh, no. I just finished it off. That's all I did.
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, wait. Scott missed? No, you never know, though, because even the tight drives, our cousin Howie, Joe, you know Howie.
Yeah.
He shot a big
Howie.
One. Yeah. he shot a real big one. That was only like 8 feet from him. So even in a drive, Ryan shot his big bear last year on a drive. So it all depends on the drive and the cover.
Well, and your dad did say, and he's like, be heads up while you're driving. He goes, because and you had even said this too, that the bears really, they're scared of you, but they're really not scared.
Yeah, they want nothing to do with you, but they're not scared of you, is like what I like to call it.
Yeah, like a deer will bolt and flee.
Yeah.
A bear really
is too smart.
Yeah.
What's going on? He's been through this 100 times before. He's confident in what he's doing, but he also wants nothing to do with you. Let's just put it that way. You know? Damn it, I got to get up and roll around or get around this guy. Yep. He's just getting away from you slowly. He wants nothing to do with you.
Yeah, and like I said, none of them – I didn't. No one said like there was. They shot their bear on a full out run.
Right. Oh yeah, they don't really run hard unless you shoot at them.
Yeah,
they'll come lumbering out. Especially big bears. Big bears don't run.
In fact, that's how you killed your bear, Scott. Right? Didn't he
mine,
come like peeking
mine
out?
Walked out.
Yeah,
peeked out of the road. I was standing on a one of our nursery roads. For those listening. And I could hear the bear coming when he was walking through the rhododendron. As the leaves are rubbing together, it kind of sounds like leather. And I could hear that coming. I knew it was a bear because a driver would be breaking sticks. So I got ready. I could see him coming. He stopped just before the road and threw his head up, and he was sniffing. I guess he thought he was clear, and he walked out in the road, just walking as slow as could be. He knew something was up, but he was trying to be quiet. And I just pounded the hell out of him. But if they think they're okay, they're not going to run.
Right.
And he thought he was okay.
Completely different game. Different game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's why it's so alluring, like you said. You might as well be hunting in Africa.
Yeah, and I half wonder, the bear you killed, Ryan, because he kind of cut across that drive all the way to the outside.
Yep.
Like, I almost wonder, like, was he picking up thermals or what was he doing? Like, why did he choose not to just drop down and run through the valley and get back up into the thick cover on the other side.
So yeah. that bear you're talking about, Joe, Ryan's bear from this year, I was driving that one, and I was the second to furthest left driver in that drive, and Howie was the furthest to the left. He jumped that bear, and it ran all the way down across six drivers, which was probably – that's an open drive. So that was probably 300 yards wide, that drive or so. And all cut down in front of everybody. Everybody crossed the tracks. And I could only assume that he was going up in those ledges or, if there was some other dense cover over there, because it was pretty open where he ran through. So there's got to be a reason he was going that way.
Yeah, and it wasn't like he didn't hear you guys, because one of the cool things about the bear drive is, and it's not necessary, and I'm sure it works to scare the bears, but it's to keep track of each other, was the hooting and the hollering. And the hay bears and the yelling and I mean it's funny because as you're hunting with the group, you can pick out the different yells and people.
As goofy as it sounds, if you think about it, I know my brother's hoot or whatever you want to call it, and I could tell obviously who's in front of me. Like I could tell Scott, oh, he's cutting in front of me or he's out ahead of me, so I can say on the radio, yo, you're going too fast, slow down. I could just tell that by his hoot,
Yep. Yeah, so you do. And then that one kid, he barked like kind of like a dog.
Yeah.
We had a couple of goobers.
Yep.
And then
what Joe's talking about is as we're driving, point, it's not to scare the bears, it's so we know where each other's at and stay in line.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it's when you're standing there and you're, and for me, a lot of these drives, I mean, actually, we didn't repeat, I don't think, but a handful of them. And that was only because bears cut back and around and stuff.
Yep.
But it's all the first time I've been in these woods, and short of taking a quick peek on my maps, I really didn't know the layout or where people were. But then you would start to hear the drivers hoot, and they're coming mm-hmm. through the woods, and you that anticipation starts building. Oh, like, yeah. Oh, they're getting close, and it's going to be now. And like the three-legged bear that little Stevie shot, like I can still remember hearing everything and like how close I was. Like, man, like we're on top of each other.
Oh yeah.
And this bear yep. still hasn't popped out, and then boom.
Yep. Yep,
and right, I mean, he was literally right in front of the drivers. Like, he had yep. no intentions. Like, he knew, I'm going to walk out there, I'm going to get shot.
Yep, keep in mind, before that, you and Justin shot at Justin's bear 50 yards from where that bear was shot.
Exactly.
So he had already heard gunshots. I'm sure he heard us set up for the drive that he was killed on. So,
and not to mention, we had shot a bear just 40 minutes prior to that
right.
on the first time going through that one swamp.
Yep.
So he had been hearing gunshots all morning.
Now, I want to point something out. The bears, Joe, if you remember, they were running from that swamp to the other swamp, right, where
yeah.
your brother killed, where Stevie killed. Those bears were running back and forth. And to get back to my bear, that bear ran across that ledge right in front of all the standers and was cutting back into the drive. So these bears are not confused about what's going on. They know they're being hunted, and they know that if they keep going straight, they're
right.
going to walk out to people. So they cut out to the side, and they run to another swamp where there's cover and safety. And like I said, they're not dumb. They're not scared.
Right.
They well, know what
and
they're
there,
doing.
And, you know, yeah, and there's also so a, yeah, and there's also a lot of strategy I've seen, and like I got to see it out of like your uncles and your dad, and they're talking about these drives, and they knew where the bears were coming out.
Yeah, a lot of them you do. Like where I shot mine, that bear is coming out there or one spot at the top. That's the only place they come out.
Yep. And then where
that's
I
what
was
I referenced
sitting
in the Burris vlog too, that some drives that are 20 acres, you could stand two standers and kill every bear that comes out because you know where they're coming out.
Yeah, but then there's always that wild card too, because
sure.
where I sat on that drive where you killed, and there was just like a highway of tracks.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's hunting. I mean, you can't ever truly predict what a wild animal is going to do.
Sure.
I mean, you can just like deer that you can pattern them, or like yep. over time you got kind of a found where they like to run if you drive it a certain way, but you
right.
can never be 100% sure.
Nope. Yep. It's all you can do.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, it was just like a constant education, and like you guys, I mean, you guys got your shit together, and then your dad and his brothers, and then Steve and these guys that have been doing this for all these years together. And it's hilarious. And like Steve, he's trying to get put in the worst damn spot that he can, cause he doesn't want to shoot a bear.
Yep. He's
and
killed
I'm
like a dozen bears.
Jinx him. I'm trying to jinx him the whole time. And it
yep.
just didn't work.
That's kind of like what James was talking about. James, you were asking about standers and drivers. This guy is Steve. It doesn't matter what the hell he's doing. The bear is going to run to him.
That's who Joe should have been hanging out with that whole time.
I don't care if he's standing upside down in a lake. Yeah,
we did. We did get to stand beside each other on that one drive, and that was Big Hill. And we can edit out the name if you guys want, but
that's
a private one.
We'll yep. beep it out. Yeah.
And I felt so good when we went walked down in there. It was beautiful.
Yeah, that's a good spot.
And the drive kind of got busted up a little bit. There was a little bit of chatter that it was guys that kind of migrated the wrong way. There was
yep.
one person that was seemingly walking circles around everybody else.
Are you guys using are you guys using compasses out there or anything like that?
You know, this year is the first year we were kind of Ryan and I were kind of stressing that if you had a compass, I had mine, and I don't know if Ryan did or not, but anyway.
I always have mine.
Yeah. If you didn't, we were
the younger guys mainly, we were telling them to pull their phones out, and we were telling them what reading to follow the whole drive.
That makes sense.
It seemed to be extremely helpful.
Yeah.
So I think that's something we're going to try to stress in the next couple of years, is everybody have a dang compass.
Yeah, that's because huge. Like, I mean, like those swamps and stuff, you get in those swamps, and you take one turn to go around a bush, and then you take another turn, and then pretty soon you're going 90 degrees around from where you started.
Exactly, because you can't see the sky in a lot of them. It's so thick, you can't see the sky, so you don't know where the sun's at. It's the same as if it's snowing or raining or foggy. It's the same.
Yeah,
think
foggy
of, you know, guys who don't have rhododendron, that's what you have to compare it to. You can get
it happens. It happens to everybody. I mean, it's happened to me. Happened to me last year. Happened to my uncles who have been doing this for 30 years. You get into a new area or just to an area that maybe it snowed and it looked a little different. Any hunter has done that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it happened to everybody, so it happens. But
yeah, Jared,
of course you'll catch hell because that's all we do is make fun of each other.
That's right.
It's going to happen to you. It's
Best part, getting cut down.
And you find stuff in the swamp. I found glasses once in there.
Boots.
You know, I found a boot. You know, you're way out where you wouldn't think. Here's what I always find, though. I always find those, like, is it called Mylar balloons? You know those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Insane how many of those you find.
In the weirdest places. Farther away, I'm like, no one's been here for a very long time. You know, I feel like I had to swim to get here. And you just see a balloon sitting there, and it's the weirdest sight.
It's creepy.
It is a little creepy.
Yeah.
How early are you guys getting up? When you're going out, is this like crack of dawn? You wait for it to get light and for bears to kind of get bedded down, or what do you do?
It kind of depends. Some like opening day, we'll try to rush to a few spots because there's another local gang that also does some drives that we do. So depending on where the sign's at, we'll try to beat them there, which is what we did this year, and ended up killing two bears on the first drive. The rest of the season, it's really not a rush to get out there because no one drives the spots or it's private land. So it kind of depends on the spot. Now, if we're next to a development, sometimes we'll wait a little while so they can come out of the developments and get back in the thick stuff. Because they'll go into developments and pick through the garbage at night.
That's hilarious.
And they'll move out of them and go into swamps or the rhododendron banks, whatever it is. So like everything else, it's kind of depends.
Yeah, it also depends. Like some of these days we killed three bears. You kill a bunch of bears, morale super high, you kind of maybe take a second, drink a beer or something.
Yeah, so
you know, talk about it.
Take us through just kind of a typical day at we'll call it bear camp.
Opening day, we try to leave pretty early, and we being Ryan, myself, my dad, and our three uncles, who were the unsaid leaders, I would say, of the group, and a couple others maybe, who really do some hard scouting. If you know, we'll make sure we're to wherever the hot sign is on opening day, which is generally one of the spots where the other guys go from the other gang. So we'll rush over to whatever one has the hot sign. And then after that, as we're making that drive, those same guys are planning the second drive. And then beyond those first two, it's kind of just a routine first day drives. We have five or six drives that we try to do on the first day. And then, geez, after that, you just never know. If the first day a bunch of bears get through you, the second day of the season, you're going to be doing those same drives again because you know there's bears there.
So by the end of the day, are you just wiped out, crawling through stuff?
Yes. And sleep pretty good.
Beer tastes extra good that night.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep.
And the cool thing was we killed a lot, and you go to the nursery garage, you get back, you eat dinner, and get warmed up a little bit, and then it's right back out to the garage, and you're skinning, and I took a lot of pictures.
That was cool for you, Joe, because James, what he's saying is if we don't kill a bear, which does happen on days, we'll just hang out at the garage and have dinner and kind of come up with a plan for the next day and kind of set our meeting time. Generally, we'll leave at first light.
Okay.
Unless it's opening day, because there's really no rush. But beyond that, this year was a hell of a year, because after you got done and had a little bite to eat, you were spending an hour and a half or 2 hours skinning
check
bears.
Station.
That'll tire you out.
Who's kidding?
Who's doing all the cooking?
Our mom really does a ton of it. All the wives, actually.
Guys. That's like a classic camp, you know?
Yeah.
What's the typical course you guys are chowing on?
A lot of stews, chili, something you could heat up quick just for lunch. We throw it on the wood stove. And
there's some great desserts.
Hoagies, A lot of desserts,
so good. It's feel good food. You know,
it is. Yeah,
you crush
soul.
You crushed that. What is that dessert called? It's like a boss.
Jeez. Yeah, that Boston cream cake or whatever the hell.
Oh,
it is.
Man. And then I got started and I couldn't stop.
Yeah. I could eat that whole thing.
But you could literally you could eat a sheet of that and not gain a pound because
you're losing weight.
I'm sure.
Yeah, anybody that's crawled through a swamp for any amount of time knows the physical toll that takes on you. Can walk a mountain maybe, but just crawl through a swamp.
Yeah.
It'll change you.
Trying to pull your leg through that nasty crap.
You're like, I hope no one's watching because I look like ridiculous right now. Crawling through.
We're going to film it one of these days. take a GoPro on a stick or something.
Before we move on in this conversation, we're going to take a quick second to introduce a new segment called Mastering Glass with Sturka Optics, where we bring on Josh, product manager from Sturka, to answer a few quick questions about glassing. These are all questions that we get on our social media page, so if you have some, shoot us a message and we'll make sure to get him answering those questions. All right, Josh, how does the average hunter determine the best optic power for his or her hunting situation, and is bigger always better?
Bigger is definitely not always better. The tendency for us Americans is that we want to get the biggest and baddest that we can, and that's not always the best serve for your hunting situation. To be honest, it's better to look at, the situation where you're hunting. Are you in thick brush? Are you in deep timber? If that's the case, a lot of times the lower magnification is actually a better optic for you. If you're glassing, wide fields, wide open spaces, that's when you would want more magnification. Another thing to keep in mind is as we age, our eyes just tend not to see things as well. So a lot of times, a lower magnification can be better, and also steadiness. You can hold an 8 power steadier than you can a 10 power, 12 power. So a lot of the times, if someone's shaky or drink a lot of coffee and have a tendency to shake a little bit, a lower power is actually better and will actually help them see things better.
And that was Mastering Glass with Sturka. Now back to our talk.
Yeah. Joe, you kind of did that, didn't you? You sent out the little video on our story.
Yeah,
the Instagram story was like Berga 2K19 is what I kept tagging. I was trying to do it as much. I didn't want to fall behind. Obviously, I'm the new guy, and I didn't want to fall behind.
Well, you're waiting.
And at first, too, like, you're the new guy, and everyone's like, but this, I didn't want to be them. I didn't want everybody looking at me like, what the hell is this whole doing with his phone out all the time? But
no, I don't think anybody is old enough to think that, but a lot of the guys, I bet, wish you took more pictures, I think.
Yeah.
Well, and it was funny because day two, old Steve, he's like, where can I follow this? Show me, like, this is awesome. And I'm like, And like, even your uncles, like your one uncle, he cut his nose up.
Dave. Yeah.
If you just look at Dave and he's not talking to you, he can seem standoffish.
Yeah. That's all of them.
Honestly. Yeah. But Dave even was like, he had like made a mention like, yeah, this is really cool. Like because he kind of figured out what I was doing and he's like, that's really cool. And I'm like, don't worry. I'm being real careful. I'm not like showing names of drives or locations. He's like, he's like, you're not an idiot. And, it was enjoyable and like I got a ton of pictures, I was there and there was sometimes I was having trouble getting stuff to load because there's some shoddy service.
Sure.
But it was really cool. It was really cool. And I mean, you're crawling through that and there was times where I didn't leave my knees. I just crawled. It was way easier than walking.
And Joe, to be honest with you, when the 3 days you were there, we didn't hit any thick swamps. Those were all the mediocre drives that we do.
And it was almost flat all three. Actually, it was a great year for the drivers because it really wasn't hell.
No, and like they had made – your uncles were making mention of the hell hole or something, and they're like, oh, you want to go in there? And, my retarded brother, he's I'll go right through there. Just take me down there. That big lumbering ox would have made it 10 foot.
I'll tell you, my dad's one of the best drivers, I think, in the gang. Like, he's phenomenal at driving.
He's got grit.
He's been doing it for over 30 years. But we did a drive probably 3 years ago, and this was on State Game Land, and it was so thick that he said, piss on this, I'm done, and quit. It was so thick that
he said, I've had enough. And if you know my dad, he doesn't really have emotions or he doesn't quit, nothing. This was like too much. I mean, it was.
And he was never the same again.
As he can't keep the swamp, Pilgrim.
But we never went back because of that. You know, if he can't do it, we're not doing it. That's.
And your dad is.
It was wild. It was really
your dad
wild.
Is a character. I liked him instantaneously. He is. You meet him, and when he talks, like the other guys listen.
Yep.
He just has that aura about him. He just, and he's got grit. Like there's no doubt about it.
Yep.
And like I was trying to eat every word he said, and I got to ride in the truck a lot with him, in the old nursery truck between drives and stuff. And I tried just to absorb everything he was saying. I'm like, he's done this forever. You could just tell, like, he has that way of, like, telling you things and explaining things. It made sense. And, like, we got on the one drive, and I was trying to drive as much as I could. And, like you guys said, guys, everybody volunteers. So, like, it's almost like whenever – if you don't raise your hand fast enough or you don't know what's going on, you get stuck standing sometimes.
Yeah.
And
that's a good attitude. Yeah.
And we got to this one spot, and we're all walking down, and he just looked at me, and he nodded his head, and he looked up. There was, like, a little tree stand, like an 8-foot little platform, and not the most solid tree stand. But what it did was it got you up above the roadies, and you could see down into this, like, the creek as it came down past you. Beautiful spot. But he just looked at me, and he looked at the tree stand, and he's like, good place to kill. And I was like, shimmy on up there. I don't care how shaky it is. Yeah. I'll be all right. And I got up there and got settled in. And I'll tell you what, I was like literally on the edge of the seat the whole time. And it wasn't because the stand was shaky. It was because like, man, I'm probably going to kill a bear here.
Yeah. That's his way of saying, you know, we've killed a lot of big bears out of this stand. And, you know, make sure you're looking over here. Like, that's his way of saying, that's about as many words as he'll ever use is. Yeah, you might kill one here. Get up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, get your shit together and pay attention.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to kind of comment on what you said about everybody being standoffish, Joe. And that's exactly the description we get a lot because we're very short worded and dry. So it's funny that you picked up on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. But initially, like, and you're the new guy, too.
Yeah.
Mind you. But then it's like, there was times where like things really lightened up and
sure. You know,
I got hammered on and I dished out a few and it was just a good time. It really was. It was just like, it took me back to being a kid at camp when we used to all go to camp and we used to put on these big ass deer drives.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me back to that. Cause I was even younger then. So, like, I was, like, the, you know, how you're a young kid, you're looking at all these older men, and they got beards, and, mm-hmm. you know, the night before, they were drinking beer and playing cards and dropping the F-bombs. And now we're in hunting mode, and they're dead serious.
Yeah.
It's like, it's better get off the pot, and let's go. And they're like, you're going to go up along this side hill, and you're like, man, I don't want to get lost. Like, I don't want to get sidetracked, and you're just trying everything you can to earn respect.
Right.
Pull your weight, do your job. Sure.
That's a great attitude.
And it's missing. Like it's definitely missing because we've done some impromptu drives with people and I just want to strangle them.
Yep.
This is why I don't do deer drives with people that I am not, you know, truly trustworthy.
Yep. It takes a lot to run around and have guys shooting at moving deer or bears, whatever.
Well, in reality, like you just said, in safety was paramount. Like there was, you know, there was no slip ups, and I mean, accidents happen, but everybody was very cognizant of where each other were, and you know, like, and there was even said that we were on one of the drives, the standards were coming up, and they started voicing, and it might even have been where we killed that three-legged bear. I can't remember, but they were like, hey, you know, we're right down here and be aware, you know, if a shot comes up and it wasn't like, oh, well, yeah, I know. It was like, yeah, okay. I got you. I hear you. I know where you're at.
That's where the radios come into play. You know, that's a huge safety factor for us, those radios.
Yeah, because of, you can't see each other.
Right. So you have to communicate where the standards are, where the drivers are. Hey, we're 100 yards away.
And that's where, like, guys like you and your brother and your dad and your uncles, they come into place. It's so important. They know where everybody's at. They know where the drive's supposed to be going. They know where the standards are at. Because a lot of times when I was driving, I'm listening to the driver beside me to my left and my right and staying in between them and trying to figure out where the drive or the standards are, because I don't know, because you get dropped off in different locations, and you know, it's not like you're dropping standards off and then walking around and driving. A lot of times you were split up from the beginning.
Right. Yep.
And I mean, obviously, you know, firearm safety and muzzle discipline and all that is, it was taught to me as a child growing up and hammered into my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like there was no time that I felt like it was unsafe. It was just so well orchestrated. It was really good. Cause like you get into some groups, when I went to Clarion, we do these big deer drives, and that's kind of what I was referencing, wanting to strangle people.
Yeah.
But you get this group of guys and college kids and some local guys, and then you'd be standing, and you would see the guy that's supposed to be driving the Greenbrier patch walk around it with two other guys.
Oh yeah.
And they don't even go through it, and you're like, why am I even standing here?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, why are we wasting our time?
It's a lot.
Or you're a driver and you walk out and they're standing there on their phone or something.
Yeah. Or their gun on their shoulder. Oh.
And then heaven forbid a deer gets up and it's just like all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
I want to look for this deer, but I think I'm going to get behind. I'm going to get behind a tree right now.
Yeah. Yep. That's it. You know what it is? It's a lack of taking hunting seriously. You know, it's a lack of respect for the animal, and it's a lack of respect for the guys around you.
200 years you've been, you know, it sounds like your family's been doing this stuff. Has it always been drives? Is this new to what you guys do, or is this kind of like an age old tradition, bear drives?
It's funny you ask that. My dad and his brothers, they always laugh and kind of look back on the days when their dad would just kind of, you know, there was a one day bear season back in the day, and my dad and his brothers would like jump out of bed at the crack of dawn, and they'd want to like really get out in the woods. Well, my grandfather had to make breakfast and, you know, get dressed and all, like he had a whole tradition. It was super slow, and you know, they really wanted to get in the woods, but they've been doing it for generations and generations in the same spot. And that's why we're so good with what Joe was saying with communication. Everything, it seems short and it seems dull, but we've been doing this for so long, same location. We know the bears, we know where they come out. That's why it seems so smooth. That's because we've been doing it for so long.
Right.
You know,
you guys probably have like nicknames for different areas in your woods and stuff like that.
Oh God. Yeah.
Oh yeah. We have
different trees. Different trees have names.
Yeah. Classic. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a little crossroad back in the woods. It's called Fifth Ave, 42nd Street. It's just two dirt roads that cross back in the woods. I mean, it's just ridiculous stuff.
Oh God!
Daniel Boone tree, yeah. Like
number four tree, the scary tree.
Yeah.
Peter's.
Wait! Tell me about these different trees.
Do you know a story behind it?
No, time out. I want to first hear about the Daniel Boone tree, then I want to hear about the scary tree.
Yeah, I do too.
You're going to be like, oh, that's it. Well, the Daniel Boone tree. My grandfather, when he was a kid, he signed Daniel Boone into the tree, thinking it was like he was pretending to be Daniel Boone.
Yeah.
So that, you know, obviously it's a beech tree, so it sticks in there forever. So that's the Daniel Boone tree. But, and then the scary tree is just a big oak tree that my dad and his brothers as kids were scared of because it had like big, nasty looking, gnarly limbs. And
it looks like a
horror movie tree. You know? Yeah.
Well, oaks can be spooky looking. They got those craggy limbs, you know.
Yeah,
they come out with all these names. They'll be talking amongst themselves, they being my dad and his three brothers. They're like, oh, down by the ostrich tree, or they'll pull something out of their ass. Where the hell is that? And they're like, oh, it's right down there by the this and the that. And we're like,
you know,
there's so much we don't know. And we've hunted the ground for 15 or 20 years now.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Do you guys
have there was.
Hey, watch it.
Go.
Do you guys have like, needless to say, I went on a deer. We'll call it an animal drive.
Yep.
Point. But the leader, I guess we were with, made us add code names. for the whole drive.
Go team one.
Yeah, right. Do you guys ever do code names?
I can't say we do. Usually it's, hey, idiot, you're behind. Yeah.
Idiot.
Hurry the hell up.
That yeah, sounds like not idiot. He's it's doing something violent. Illegal, maybe. I don't know, but the only reason you need a code name for something is
you don't want who are you trying to hide from?
Oh, man. So, no, we don't use code names.
And everybody has the same code name. Screw up.
Did they really make you do that?
Oh, yeah.
That's why.
It's really dumb. Really dumb.
Is it to tell them apart because your names weren't different? Were there like five Jarrett's there?
I don't know. I didn't play along with their games.
You know, it's funny that you say that. We have five Steves in our group.
Yeah, I could
use everyone's Steve.
I could see why a code name would help there.
Steve. It was nice for me. I just threw out Steve.
Yeah.
It was a good
odds were in your favor, yeah.
Yep. I'll never forget anybody's face, but I'm horrible with names.
Yep.
And I'd be like, Steve. And you get like five guys to look at you and I was talking to Joe. Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
But it was good. And there was no arguing. Like, you're
a hostile camp.
Nobody. There was no arguing. Like, mm-hmm. There was some discussion about where we were going.
Sure, yeah.
Why.
Yeah.
But there was never any arguing. It was, and the discussion was a short one liner like, well, that's stupid, yep. You know, or it was just something short, and then it was over, and we still would carry on with the plan normally that your dad or brother had, you know, your dad or one of his brothers had picked up anyway.
Yes, right. One of the big arguments we always have, I know what you're talking about, Joe, is the one day, the first day you were there, we did one drive at the nursery.
Yes, that was generally all about the nursery.
Yep. Generally, there's about six drives at the nursery, which is our family property. And we try to do them all in one day because then you can somewhat kind of rule that out, that there's nothing there or there's a bunch of bears there.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you only do one, then you got to do it again the next day because something could wander out of a different patch and go in there. So that was one of the arguments on the first day those guys were there is why the hell would we do one drive at the nursery? Because you know you're going to do them all the next day. So that was – I think that's what Joe's referencing at that spot.
We did kill a big bear there, though, on that drive.
Yeah, the biggest.
Yep. Yeah, my biggest. My bear, yeah.
How many bears did you guys kill again? Was it like – seemed eight. Like 20 bears were – at some point. I'm seeing Joe's sending me pictures. I'm thinking they're like
they
different
not
bears.
They stop coming either.
You know. Eight bears, did you say?
Yep. Yeah. No, it was our best year. Yep, eight bears. It was our record year for the history of the entire
200
price
years.
Group. But yeah, there you go. Yeah. 200 years. Yep.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
And why? What was different? Was it a better berry crop this year, or what's the reason for this many bears?
I think some of it has to do with last year. It was kind of crappy weather, so a lot of guys either didn't hunt or only hunted maybe one day or so.
Well, the game changer this year was the snow. Not that
helps
for
sure.
Game changer this year. We've had snow before, but the snow this year, I think really the stars aligned. It was a decent acorn crop if you got to like higher elevations, and you know, like Scott was saying, there wasn't a huge amount of pressure.
Yep.
Last year, not to mention, the game commission always wants more bears killed. In fact, PA usually kills just about half as many bears
as
they always want to. So
before you move on from that, Ryan, as Ryan was saying before, our grandfather, when our dad was our age or younger, and back when our grandfather and his brothers were the leaders, there was only a one-day season,
mm-hmm.
period.
Wow.
You know, now we have about 15 days to hunt bears with the archery and the regular season and the deer overlap. So we almost have a little over 2 weeks now. So back then, there was a one-day season, period, or there were some years where there was no season at all. So that shows you how many more bears there are now than, you know, 50 years ago or whatever it may be. So
thank you, Gary Alt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you there.
No kidding.
I mean, he catches a lot of shit, but he definitely did something.
Yeah.
What did he do?
Now,
he's the biologist that brought the bears back.
Yep.
Through season and
– okay.
Just the different habitat improvements.
Conservation.
Didn't he kick off the antler point restriction too? Was that him?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay,
he was part of that. Yep. He's a very forward thinker.
Oh, yeah. I like that. He wasn't okay. About to piss anybody yeah. off. So
yeah, whatever. You're going to piss people off no matter what.
Yep, yep. And now when Ryan and I, kind of a side note, when we started hunting, it was nothing to see 40 deer a day. Nothing. Yeah. I mean, we do the same drive five times in a row and shoot three or four deer every time.
Mm-hmm.
And guys say that that's why you see a lot of Pennsylvania guys saying the hunting sucks now, is because it's not like that anymore by any means. You see five or six deer now, and it's a good day. Yeah. But the quality of deer is way better.
And so and that goes I for the woods as well. That
for a second. Then the woods are much better, right? So there's more rabbits, more grouse, you know,
healthier
more
animals,
everything.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
it's true. Kind
of a tangent there, but
yeah, it's true. Well, and one of the things is we're talking about deer and other animals and other game. The cool thing that I discovered that I didn't know, and I knew it before I went out there, that the deer and the bears don't necessarily inhabit the same terrain or areas.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
And, so if it was, I could speak for Ryan here. If we're going to hunt bear, like going to stand hunt bears, not with a group, just going to kill a bear with a bow or gun, whatever, it's going to be much thicker stuff than we're going to be hunting deer in.
Okay.
Not that a deer wouldn't go there or a bear wouldn't go where a deer is, but if you want to kill a bear specifically, I'm going to be hunting where I might only be able to shoot in one place.
Mm-hmm.
The entire 360 degrees around my stand.
Yeah.
It might be a 5-foot opening
really?
In the rhododendron.
And there's something to say about that, because I did not see but one. I take that back. I seen a buck, just a scrub buck, and a doe.
Great point.
And that was it.
Yep.
And now some other guys saw some deer here and there, but you're thinking you're driving this cover, you're going to see buckets of deer.
Four days worth of driving, you might see three or four deer. And that's not because there's no deer. It's because we're not driving deer cover.
Yep.
You know, it's and when you that's think about it, it makes sense. But
yeah. And that's why, going back to bears being smart and wary of people, that's why they're in there. Because that's where humans don't go, generally speaking, except us, right? It's so thick that guys don't go in there to chase turkeys or deer around. It's usually a safe haven for animals, these spots that we hunt. So that's where the bears go.
There is a buck in one of those spots. It's got Scott's number.
Really?
Oh, God. What's that? He's right there at the nursery again, Joe. That's the picture I sent you.
Yep. Oh, is that the one you sent pictures of?
The big 8-pointer? Is that the one I sent you guys?
I think you sent one about – it was in the nursery.
So I'll go over it. You guys can use it if you want to. But there's been this buck at our nursery for – it's been a shooter for 4 years. First picture I got of it was like 115-inch 8-pointer. So however old you want to call that, probably 2. So he's old enough by far now. He's 6-plus for sure. And he lives right there at our nursery, right there where everybody's working every day, running chainsaws, running tractors. This year specifically, at night he would go in and jump into our nursery fence and eat all the weeds, and then jump out in the morning and go who the hell knows where. And he's got a very distinct track. His left front track, hoof, I should say, is splayed way out, and the tip is broken off the left side.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And the deer's track is just stupid looking.
He's been doing the same thing.
And we cannot kill him.
And years. The same buck has been doing.
I didn't even have to read the caption. I don't know this deer. I've never hunted this deer. But as soon as you sent me the picture, I seen the track, and I'm like,
It's stupid. Deer don't. And horse. Now, keep in mind, this isn't a deer that lives on a 60,000 acre state forest. This is a deer that lives on our nursery, which we pound the hell out of.
Right.
Yeah.
And surrounding properties. All of our neighbors let us hunt.
There's not a chunk of land around that buck's territory that we don't drive. For bucks,
that's amazing.
Bears,
that is amazing. You know, if you think about how many people are in the woods, how many eyes constantly with trail cameras, hunters, people out and about, the fact that you can live that long.
Yeah.
Yep. It's incredible.
Yeah. Like, I think a human would have a tough time doing that.
Yeah, with the ability
to
reason.
As smart as we are.
Absolutely.
Right. Like, how smart we are.
How many times have you seen that deer on the hoof during legal shooting hours?
Ryan filmed me almost kill him 2 days in a row 2 years ago. That was two times. This year, I've only seen him one time. That's the only times that I'm aware of people seeing him while hunting. During the summer, people have seen him. My uncles have seen him in the summer. But as far as I know, 3 hunting season sightings in 4-plus years.
Is he still alive?
Oh, he's still alive. He just literally walked through my yard after the snow we just got 2 days ago.
Yeah.
He's taunting you.
Yeah,
he is. He
stresses me out.
Well, now that we've been talking about deer, bear, let's talk a little bit of the difference in the weaponry.
Sure.
Mm. So
go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, kick it off.
So primarily, we use a Marlin 336 in 35 caliber, and it's a lever gun. For anybody who doesn't know, it is an absolute killing machine. It's an absolute epitome of a brush gun. If you look at like Scott and I's gun and all of our uncles, they are all scratched to hell. All the bluing is off of them. There's no like it. You would think, who is the jabroni who has this gun?
Yeah.
Without a doubt. You know without what I mean? Like this guy's a mess. And then you get looking closer at the gun and there's like 15 notches on it. And they're all bare. You know, like, I'll tell you about
these
guns.
Well, mostly iron sights.
Yeah.
Aside from a couple guys.
The guns are so tough. Like, I used to, I still do it. I did it last year. If you come across, like, a big, thick patch of greenbrier, which, if you're not familiar with greenbrier, it is, like, in terms of, like, northeastern America, it's probably the worst bush to come across.
It would be the equivalent of the razor wire atop of a state prison.
Yeah. No kidding.
The prickers don't break off.
Yeah. It's just horrible. Anyways, I'll take this gun and I'll lay it across this greenbrier patch and I'll walk across the gun, get to the other side, and then pick my gun up and continue hunting and not think twice about it. You know, I've done that multiple times. They're great guns. 35 is plenty gun for a bear and deer. I kill plenty of deer with it. But yeah, I mean, I can't speak highly enough about it.
Yeah, I got I shoot a similar gun that looks like no one has taken care of it for years. I can't say I've taken great care of it, but it's a Marlin 30-30. It's got the over-under sights.
Yeah.
The scope on it. No zoom in the scope or anything.
Awesome.
It's great for say, because we have a very similar landscape here, minus the mountains in Michigan, where it's just thick swamp. You know, if you're doing, you know, the first couple deer I shot were with the iron sights just because they were running or moving through the swamp.
Yep.
Very different than, you know, even if you go down to Illinois or like some other parts of the state, more down south is more open for us too.
Yeah. I bought one. I bought a 336, a Marlin, and Scott helped me out because there's a big list of, because Remington acquired them. And
yep.
Just like everything else Remington touches, they turn it to shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to get an old one and a good one. And I ended up picking up a 1966, and it's got the JM stamped barrel.
Yeah.
And I opted to not get the crossbolt safety. That's why I went older. And my gun came brown. It's not blued.
Awesome.
It acquired quite a few new scratches and bumps this year.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to.
Yeah. But it's a tack driver, and I put on the and Scott was kind of alluding to it. Most of these guys, his uncles and dad, they're all running iron sights or peep sights, and then you have a few of us young guys. We're running the Burris Fast Fire 3, which is just a reflex red dot.
It's
lightning fast. Yep. Oh, it's lightning. There's no parallax on it, so you can literally, if you can see the dot, that's where you're going to hit. It doesn't matter if you're shouldered properly, improperly. It doesn't matter. And I put that on, and when I zeroed that gun, I just did it at 50 yards because, as Scott was telling me, most shots are around 30, and very rarely you're going to get a shot over 50. And he was absolutely right. There's not the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So I zeroed it at 50, and I was shooting like under half-inch groups with this old Marlin 336 with a Burris Fast Fire. The gun can shoot. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And it can take a beating.
Yep.
And it was funny because we talked, you know, you beat your gun. I mean, you do. It's I not deliberately, like you're holding it like a baseball bat and whacking down the jaggers, but it takes a beating.
Oh yeah.
And you're using it as a crutch, and you're crawling sometimes you're on it. Yeah, it's in the snow. It's you're using it, you know, to help you across a little stream.
Yeah.
A million different things, and it gets wrapped around. So I hunted through the bear season, and then I actually carried it. I wanted to still hunt some multifloral rows in West Virginia, and I took it out. I'm like, this gun's perfect for that. I have all the confidence in the world in it. And then my subconscious got the better of me, and I'm like, man, I've been beating the hell out of this thing. I should just check to see if the fast fire is still on, because I hadn't – this is my first real experience with a reflex red dot on a hunting gun. I use them on work guns, but not on hunting guns. And my AR gets – the shit pounded out of it, and I've never lost a zero, but nonetheless I checked it. It didn't move, it didn't budge. It's still under, you know, sub half inch group at 50 yards, and it's fast, it's quick. I loved it. And I think even your dad was kind of, I think, in agreement that he's going to run one next year.
Yeah, he will.
He's been handling my gun and Ryan's gun, and he's pretty excited about getting one in his hands. I think it seems that way.
And well, my dad's going to one on his turkey gun. He doesn't know it yet, and I don't think he'll hear it. I don't think he'll hear this before Christmas. So
I was gonna say the difference between these Burris fast fires and most really any other red dot is how small and durable they are. And there's not really a red dot out there that I trust on a bear gun. You know, it gets smashed into rocks as you're crawling through the brush, and you're not really paying attention to it, but you could trust these red dots as you're going through the brush. You don't have to look down and see that it's not
still working or still got a dot.
I mean, it's just speaking of, they're awesome.
Speaking of being broken, when I got mine, I've had mine a little bit longer than Ryan's. I was kind of nervous. That was the first reflex sight that I've used. So they look, I don't want to say light, but they don't look like they could withstand.
They are light.
But I was definitely wrong. Yeah, they are. I guess that's the way to put it. Light looking. So I was nervous that crawling on it and busting it through the rhododendron, pulling my gun through the brush.
Yep.
I thought I'd be busting the glass out of it. And when I was using it this bear season for the first time. I wasn't babying at all. I was using it like I would be using iron sights just to make sure it would do the job. And it definitely did. And if you were to break the glass out, Burris would cover that anyway. They have some crazy warranty where no matter what the hell you do to it, unless it's intentional, they're going to replace your sight, which is pretty important to the way we hunt.
Yeah,
because I texted you the other night. I finally got around to cleaning I wiped it down and just to stow it. I'll probably clean the barrel out. I don't know. I was wiping it down just because I don't want it to rust by sitting. Sure. I mean, if it rusts because I'm hunting with it, that's one thing, or I get blood on it, that's another. But just sit it in the safe. I was wiping it down, and I realized that the buckhorn sight, my buckhorn rear on, and I don't know when it happened. I'm assuming it happened in West Virginia. I think I would have noticed it if it would have happened during bear camp.
Yeah.
But if anybody's familiar with the old buckhorns, there's a – it almost looks like a staircase, it goes under, and that's how you adjust your elevation. That rear sight doesn't have the ability to adjust windage, just elevation.
Unless you move the whole sight. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was gone. The staircase was gone, and I don't know the technical name for it, but it was gone. And I noticed that the rear sight wasn't sitting snap flush against the barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say it was bent, but when I pushed on it, it pushed down flat to the barrel, but it's somewhere along the line, it had got pulled up. That staircase or that step had got pulled out and was gone. Yep. And it was on, I mean, I mark it. I actually, on my phone, I have in my notes under weapon numbers, I had it marked. It was on the third step up and it was, well, now useless.
Right.
But
yep.
It just goes to show you that, I mean, that red dot, it never missed a beat all season.
Yep.
And it makes, you know, you got the old guys, you know, a lot of the old guys are stuck in their way. Well, that God for dangled red dot, it will turn off or it won't work. Well, I've had the contrary. And you guys were telling me you guys have had front sights ripped off.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Twice in 1 year.
Really?
So it says, I mean, it's
busted off.
Well, I lost the hood, which was no loss, but I lost, you know, you have the hood on the front sight. Sure. I lost that on day one. actually, day one, probably like hour one. That was gone. Gone. That and along with my dry feet because
yeah, it was wet.
Scott's infinite wisdom. I'm like, what about muck boots? He's like, I don't think you got a good pair of 10-inch boots. Just throw them on, you'll be good.
You got wet?
Yeah. Oh hell yes, I got wet.
James, it was the wettest year. Now this is not just me saying it. I've only been hunting 15 years. My dad said the same thing. The wettest year, plus 10 inches of snow the first year or so.
So you're just sinking down.
It wasn't the snow that got me.
No, we did some wet drives.
Yeah.
And Joe, it was off the bat, right? You guys.
Yeah, it was the very first drive. Yeah. I was wearing a pair of 10-inch Danners, and I had on a pair of gaiters, and I'm like, I'm good. I'm golden. I'm going to be dry. And yeah, shit, that was
a good introduction.
Both feet were wet. At lunch, I was like, I wasn't hungry. I wasn't even worried about eating. Eating was like the lowest thing on my totem pole at lunchtime. I went and got dry boots, dry socks, and I got a crash course on bear hunting apparel and gear, and I put on a pair of waterproof rain pants. I taped them to my boots, and then I threw my gaiters over top of that, and I was happy and dry the rest of the time.
Yeah.
But
you put on
little
gaiters over top of rain pants.
Yeah, because I didn't want the tape to get ripped. I didn't want the bottom of the rain pants to get ripped loose. And I figured it was just another barrier to help that seam not leak. Because, I mean, you're literally, when you're going through these swamps, you are up to just below your knees most of the time in water.
Yeah.
Is it cold?
Is it
too cold to just be like, screw it, I'm going to get wet. I'm just putting on tennis.
Oh, hell, it was way too cold.
Okay.
Yeah. James,
and then you figure you're wearing waterproof boots and all the water gets stuck on the inside and they don't heat their water in the Poconos. That swamp water's cold.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are years that you can get wet. Like you could say, I'm going to get wet, but you have to drive the rest of the year because if you stand to drive, you're going to freeze because you're standing still for at least 30 minutes.
Usually more.
Yeah, usually more, but you'll freeze, so you have to drive.
Unless it's
just rain. If it's just rain, I almost never wear rain gear just because I hate that feeling.
Yeah.
Because you sweat more than you get wet from the damn rain. But this year, there was no precipitation. It was already snow on the ground, so I had waterproof pants, which thank God, because that would have been
– It was an awesome call. Like, that was a great call. And I mean, next year I brought – I didn't bring that much this year gear wise, but I still brought too much and I wore the same stuff. There's definitely a recipe that works, and then I'm sure I'll screw that up next year and
you'll figure it out. I mean, for sure, you know,
completely
I usually
different.
Wear long johns, but my long johns aren't to stay warm, it's just so the briars get less than my legs.
One layer of protection extra.
And I hate those brush pants because I can't lift my leg high enough because they're so stiff. At least the ones I've had, you know, maybe there's better ones, but I'm not spending $400 on pants. I'll tell you that much.
Nah.
Plus they won't survive. Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
I wore a pair of True Spec rain pants. I know you got some at that outdoor store close to you, but I wore True Spec rain pants and they held up awesome. I'm very impressed.
I was surprised at the ones I got. I thought they would shred and they did. They were Rivers West for anybody who's interested. I picked them up at our local sports shop.
Yeah, they did well too.
Yeah, kind of has like a Carhartt type outside, and they did. I was surprised. Let's put it that way.
There seems to be.
Go ahead.
No, go Rod.
There seems to be a movement towards waxed, like Carhartt material clothing right now, which is pretty interesting. I've always wondered that. Like guys are, I mean, companies are making it. Companies like Filson have it, and it's a very durable Carhartt type material, and all it is, you can apply this wax or you could buy it waxed, and you get the benefit of a super tough material. It's quiet and it's also waterproof, and you could reapply the wax, so it's not
without the rubber membrane.
I haven't tried anything like that, but it's something to definitely look into.
I contemplated buying a pair of, it's like Filson double tins or something.
Yep.
And the price tag steered me clear.
There's YouTube videos that show you how to do that at home. Like, you could go buy a pair of Carhartt pants or, you know, whatever other brand, and you could just apply a wax to it, and it does the same thing.
I'll have to check that out.
A fraction of the price. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's made for bear season to me, you know?
Yeah. Well, you're not worried about stinking, or
you're not worried about the smell,
and you're really not worried about how noisy per se you are.
Nope.
Maybe your own sanity level, like those Kadura brush pants would drive me bonkers because all they do is swish all day.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there's definitely a different gear list, and like you definitely are not. I don't know how I want to say this, but like. The $300 First Light pants, though they will work, are probably not the best choice for bear hunting in this application.
Right. Yeah.
I go as low budget as I can with optimal function.
And simple. Yeah, I guess that's what you're – yep, exactly. So simple. Like,
yeah.
You don't need to carry almost anything.
Nope.
Because it's going to get lost or broken.
Right.
So less gear. I always go with the cheapest gear, actually. Like, I'll go buy some cheap-ass Wranglers from Walmart. I just destroy them and throw them away, you know, because the way I hunt, I don't care if my clothes get ripped. I'll just, like, if I get caught up on greenbriars, I'm ripping myself out of there. I don't care.
Yeah.
So I'll just buy some cheap clothes and throw it away. I don't want to do that with expensive stuff.
Yeah, I would say the necessities that I found, and I quickly found out, were your gun, really just the bullets that – I mean, that's the beauty of shooting M336 is the bullets that you put inside it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to wear orange.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then your radio. Past that, and then a good knife. And but a good knife kind of became the question – at the end, because I was running a Havilon, it did well, but Howie's his broke, and his boy almost cut his damn finger off using that Havilon, because that back roll pin fell out.
Broke off, yeah. The replacement blade knives are good for, like, if you're like butchering, or you're doing like I do a little bit of taxidermy work. So anytime you're like doing detailed stuff. Mm-hmm. Now you can see the blade, but if you're reaching up into a chest cavity,
that'll slice you bad. I bet
it's too sharp. Yep. It's too sharp.
Not to mention the blade can fall off, and there you are reaching up into a cavity that you can't see with the loose razor blade.
Yeah,
you know, like there's stuff like that that it's just not vetted enough for me to use it. I buy a little German blade on Amazon. You know, it's a really nice.
But that was
blade.
A cool knife. That was a cool knife. I like that.
Yeah, it's like $30 or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to
super
go with that
thin. Yeah, I mean,
I did because of Howie's knife. I still have my Havilon. Actually, yeah, it's in my pocket now. But I went and got myself a Taito. It's not a folder. It's a fixed blade with the replaceable blades. I'm going to run the hell out of that and see if I have any failures. I don't think I will. They seem to be beating the crap out of them out west, and they're holding up pretty good. I mean, these guys are literally tearing down elk, bear, muleys. I mean, they're tearing them down in the field to pack them out, right. And that's their knife of choice. So I'm going to give it a shot. It looks stout. It looks real stout.
Which Havilon are you running right now, Joe?
I don't know. One with a sharp blade.
Are they the thin blades, or are they more the thicker?
Yeah, they're thin. It's the number.
Piranha.
Yeah, the Piranha. The 60.
That's what I was looking
at. I think the 60 blade. Because there's two blades. Because when I got my Taito, I got there's two different blades. One's more for like your all purpose, like cutting meat. It has more of it's a pointed blade. And then I also got, and I think it's number 22, but I could be wrong. It's got more of a rounded tip.
Yeah, that's for 22. Skinning. I have 22s, yep.
Yeah, for skinning and doing like kind of like detail work with the hide or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, gear can make or break a hunt, but it can make or break a hunt. But really, if you're not killing anything, what the hell? You can have the best gear in the world. It doesn't do you shit of good.
Sure.
If you're not killing anything. So, I mean, a lot of it, in kind of like why I like bear hunting so much, there's a lot of grit involved. Like, you ain't going to be no pussy and go out there and get it done. I mean, I'm sure that there's some out there that, but it takes some grit. It takes some intestinal. No, you're not going to fit in there. It takes some intestinal fortitude. You're going to have to push through the greenbrier. You're going to have to push through the rhododendron. You don't really got another option.
Yep.
Because if you don't, you're not going to get invited back. That was very clear. And we can, if Ryan doesn't want to talk about it, but there was a guy that got invited this year.
Please talk about it.
So I wasn't there to witness it, but did I hear about it? And he shoots a bear on the first day, and then he up and leaves.
Yeah.
Well,
he didn't stay the whole time.
Right. Not even that whole day.
Right.
Wow.
Well, it was very clear amongst everybody that he wasn't going to be coming back.
Yeah.
And whatever it may be, whatever his reason is, I don't know. I don't know him. I never met him. But I was like, I'll be damned if I drove 5 hours.
Right.
Would shoot a bear at their expense because it's their drives, their woods. They welcomed us like
with open arms. Into their history.
Into their history, into their home, into their heritage. And they put a bear up for you and you kill it. And then you're like, ah, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't.
I made the joke. It's really not a joke to me. I was going to miss the birth of my daughter so I can keep bear hunting. we laugh, but I told my wife months and months before, you know, it was even close to her giving birth. I said, listen, I gave her the whole spiel. I said, listen, this might happen. And, you know, at first she was like, oh, please don't. And then it was like, okay, well, he's serious. So, you know, this might happen. Some people might look down on that, but
there's a lot of marital wisdom. Yeah. You know, and here's what it is. Ryan, is that you that's saying this?
Yeah,
that's, you know, Ryan.
One thing that I've learned about marriage is your life is all based on the expectations that you set. So if you set these expectations that, hey, I'm going to go bear hunting no matter what, you'll never disappoint her because she started out disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will say, Ryan, your next kid, plan it a little better.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it really worked out well though. I've never hunted lucky. More in my life. Yeah,
not to you got lucky.
She's a gem. I mean, she. Well, let's put it this way. It was probably, I don't know, 5 years ago. She came bear hunting with us, and she killed a bear, shot it right in the head, and she drove the rest of the season, did better than most men, you know, like it was awesome. So she's a keeper. But.
Well, Tom, you're going to have to edit that out because I already told my sister-in-law, there's no girls in bear camp.
There hasn't been one since, but
yeah.
It's my story and I'm sticking to it. Yeah. She started, I really want to kill a bear. I'm like, I'm sorry, honey, but it's boys only.
It's a boys club. That's right.
She even went right at Scott, right on Instagram.
Yeah, he's an easy target. Yeah.
she's like, what's this mean? Joey's telling me there ain't no girls in bear camp. And Scott texts me. He's like, you see it? I'm like, I saw it.
Yeah.
I didn't know how forward I could be with that. I had to check with Joe first.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys got to tell me this stuff before we have these podcasts.
She's got thick skin. She married my brother. I mean, he's a gem. You guys met him.
Yep.
She's got to have thick skin. But yeah, and then what Scott he replied, well, just ask Joe. He knows best. And then
Joe knows best.
Like, dude, I got the death text message. I was like, she's like, I'm gonna come down there and pay you a visit, and I'm like, oh
yeah.
She's not happy about that, but
going
you know
back
what
to, go ahead
I and I stress this to my wife and to her, me and my brother, like, we grew up hunting. That's all we did as kids. We grew up just like you two grew up hunting together.
Yep.
Me and my brothers grew up on a farm. We hunted, and that was like our thing. And then even like my brother went to the Marine Corps. He would come home and, like, I took more enjoyment out of putting him on a deer. He was like a notorious buck killer in his 3 days that he was home every day during every year during archery season, because I busted my ass to make sure that there was going to be a buck that would walk in front of him while he was home. And when we all grew up and got married and had kids, like, there's just not the time. And that's kind of what I stressed to her. Like, this is my trip. This is like our time. Like, I don't get much time with him, and he's going to drive me nuts on driving there, but we need this time. Like, it's not the same as just hanging out at the house.
Sure. It's really what keeps, at least for the prices, it's what keeps us together. Really. Yeah,
it strengthens the family fabric.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, we're suffering together. We're laughing together.
Well, it shows you what it's like as probably a young man, what it means to be a man. When it's a boys only, I know a lot of people might get upset by that, but I know growing up for me, once you get invited to deer camp, I mean, that's first of all, it's a big deal.
Oh yeah.
And secondly, there are expectations. You get to see how men act appropriately.
Sure.
And inappropriately.
Yeah, and a little bit.
Damn.
More importantly, inappropriately.
You gotta find the line. But I mean, it is critical for like just forming who you are.
No, you're absolutely right.
Sure. Not to be cliche, but it's kind of like a rite of passage for us. If you're invited to bear camp, it means you're ready.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid, we were, Scott and I were allowed to curse at bear camp. That's the only place we were allowed to say the F word. So we were like just outrageous cursers during bear camp until my mom walked in. But, even as kids, we had super high expectations. That's how if you want to have a successful group of guys, your expectations for the guys in the group need to be at a level that's it actually drives people away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, when I was telling Joe about it, there was half of me that was trying to make him not come.
Oh, sure.
I wasn't trying to make it sound all fun and, like it was,
That backfired.
Something lackadaisical.
That backfired because every time you're like, this, and I'm like, that sounds
yep.
And, great.
Joe, perfect. I'll never forget it. You said, you had me at don't come unless you're a bitch. Or, reverse that, however you say it. But I was that's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Yeah. These guys coming in, you have to be a no-shit, hunter, a killer to be in our group. And, if you don't get invited back, it's not like we don't like you or we think less of you. You don't have what it takes. That's all right. No hard feelings. We're still friends, but
come back when your balls drop a little.
Right. Come back when you're serious about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you started an uproar in my house because my 5-year-old is like, "What do you mean I'm not ready?"
Yeah.
Dad.
That's right.
Oh, he is. He's insane.
Let it fester in him.
That's
Yeah.
We were out at the property the other day. And I'm like, normally I have to carry him up the real big hill into the back. And he's stomping. And I said, hey, I was like, you want to jump? Nope. I got to prove I can make it. I can do it.
That is great.
Love it.
Marched his little ass all the way up the hill. He slept like a baby afterwards. But yeah, he's starting to get it. And you're right. Like even as a kid, like whenever I was real young at camp, I was allowed to come to camp, but I wasn't allowed to go to the neighbor's camp because at our camp, it was like me, my dad, my brothers would come up. Every once in a while, my mom would come up. My grandma was there and my pap. And that was really it. And then, like every once in a while, one of my uncles would come. They weren't regulars. But the neighbor's camp, they were, and I call them city boys now. I didn't realize it at the time, but they were from like the city. And, they're a wild, wild group. Like there was drinking, cursing, the whole 9 yards. That's where they went to get away. And so I would, my pap and dad would go up to the neighbor's camp and stuck at our camp with grandma playing 500 rum and go fish and the whole time waiting for hear the door crack and be like, hey, what was going on up there?
Yeah.
And then even when we were kids, initially you weren't allowed to go out. Like you get up and everybody would get breakfast and eat coffee. They would go to their stands or wherever they were hunting. And we were just too young. We just weren't allowed to go. And like, you would sit there all day, every gunshot. I bet you that was dad.
Yeah.
That was dad. That was dad's gun. That was dad's gun. Mm-hmm. And another gun would go off. That was Pap. Yeah, Grandma, if you just let me, I'll go back there. I know where his tree stand. I did know where his tree stand was at. I'll go help him bring his deer in. No, you're not allowed.
Yep.
And then finally you would see them dragging the deer, getting close to camp and grandma only had one leg, so she couldn't stop us.
Yeah.
So we just bullied through the door, and then we would be out trying to help them drag it up into the shed. But that's what – I mean, that's – and you guys have the same thing going on. And you guys still have it going on in the year 2018.
Yeah.
Where all around the country that's dying.
Yeah.
It truly is.
Yep.
We're growing a world full of pussies and snowflakes.
Yeah.
And the grit of hunting, like, yeah, there's still guys that go out and Instagram hunt and shit. And there's, you know, there's a big disconnect between a lot of people of what really – what hunting is – versus what they think it is or what they see it is or what people personify it as.
Yeah.
And it a bit lost, I think. I mean, that
I think just in general, what's getting lost is young men, or in other words, the future of men, being around men who have done it all already. You know, like...
the role model.
Right, exactly. Being around a group of men who are like, no shit, this is what we do, this is what we have always done. And we're going to show you how we do it. And for Scott and I, we're still learning from these guys. Like Scott made the joke before, they're saying names of places that we've walked on forever. I mean, since we were little kids, and we're like, what the hell are you talking about? And they have just experiences in these places, and you know, they tell stories, and it's just like legendary, you know, and that in general is getting lost from our culture. It's bad. It's really bad, I think.
I agree with you.
You know, a group of killers. That's really a valuable thing.
You guys got a really cool group. Like, you got a diverse group. Like, I mean, Howie, he's crazy. And what he was in Maine, like, hunting hares or something.
He travels up there quite a bit.
That's his thing, is running rabbits.
Yeah, he said he's not much into the deer hunting and the bow hunting and anything like that anymore.
No, bears and rabbits.
Which is probably better, because he smokes, like, a pack of cigarettes on every drive.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I'm a scent fanatic, so. Yeah.
Well, you wear all the scent lock.
No, that's your best buddy. who I don't think poops during deer season, quite honestly.
No, he holds it in.
You got to hold that shit in, man. You have 3 months, and you got to grin and bear it.
A little bloated by the end.
Yeah, you feel heavy. You don't move quite as well as you did day one. Hey, you know, on that note, guys, I think we're at 2.5 hours in, I think. This has been fantastic. I appreciate you both for coming on.
For sure. Yeah, we appreciate you.
Good to talk bear hunting. Good to hear your perspective on many manner of things. Thank you.
Not a problem.
Anytime. Like to do it again.
I appreciate you guys coming on. I appreciate you guys having the faith in me to bring me out there.
No, you fit right in. Well,
I'm looking forward to it again. I know it's all my brother talks about, so.
Well, now that we know you're in the woods, we might not have.
Yeah.
In the woods. Why did I bring that up? I was in the clear. Nobody even knew.
I was just trying to be cool. Funny.
Nobody even knew.
Yeah, relatable.
All right.
Anyways, well, thank you, dudes. We will talk to you soon. We got to do this again. We've got a lot more stuff I think we could cover. So.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yep. Awesome.
All right.
Good deal. Thanks guys.